MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's on the move in the expert rest of season rankings? Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Ryan Warmly. I do social media here at Fantasy Pros, in addition to sometimes hosting podcasts. And joining me for today's episode are two of the 17 most accurate rankers in the industry entering Week 10, according to the Fantasy Pros Expert Accuracy Competition. One of them is Fantasy Pros Editor-in-Chief Dan Harris. Dan, do you think that you're 12th or 17th in our year-to-date expert accuracy contest?
I don't want to talk about it whatsoever. I'm going to go with 17th, and this is as Pat knows because we were joking about it early on in the season. I got off to just a dominant start in the accuracy competition, and I was like top five for a couple of weeks. I was number two, and now it's just been like you're slowly sinking, and you're like, I gotta hold on. People are too sharp, so I'm going to guess I'm 17th overall.
You are correct. So that's actually one thing you got right, finally. The man who is ranked higher at 12th overall entering Week 10 is Fantasy Pros analyst Pat Fitzmaurice. Pat, do you think your ranking is moving up or down after Week 10?
Wait. Pat is not 12th. Pat, you're like top five, aren't you?
No. I slid last
week. Sunk down after the last couple of weeks. He was top five for a while.
Well, now I feel so much more confident in this podcast. Like, I was coming on here and I was like, great, I got to go on with Pat. He's like enormously accurate and I'm just an idiot. And now I feel like we're both idiots. So that's great.
I mean, you're both top idiots. 17 out of like 100, whatever, how many we have. That's pretty decent.
I think what we can just say, we can all agree that we're just both way higher than Yates, which I think is all the only thing that matters to me, really, at all in this company. So
yeah, I got tired of scrolling down trying to find his name, so I just gave up eventually. But Pat, you didn't answer. How did you do in Week 10? Do you think you're moving up or not so good?
Not so good, probably. It was not a banner week. Not horrible, but probably not moving up any.
As always, I want to make sure the listeners can find the three of us online. Dan's Twitter handle is at DanHarris80. Pat's is at Fitz_FF. And I can be found at Ryan Warmly. And of course, you can find Fantasy Pros all over the internet at Fantasy Pros. You can also find us at fantasypros.com/myplaybook, of course. And there you can sign up for our entire suite of tools to help you dominate the 2021 fantasy season. That includes our trade analyzer, which allows you to get instant analysis for any trade offer. We also have a trade finder that can do the heavy lifting in your negotiations. I personally hate negotiating because I'm a people pleaser who doesn't like to turn other folks down. But the trade analyzer makes it really easy for me. Somebody in my dynasty league actually made me an offer just the other day that I had no interest in. And instead of having to let them down easy, I could just point to the analyzer and say, sorry, our tool says it's a no-go. It was that simple for me. They knew it was a lost cause at that point. You can also find us at youtube.com/fantasypros, where we've got fun giveaways and, of course, tons of podcast videos just like this one. We've also got so much more content, including quick-hitting advice videos and live streams throughout the week, and also on Sunday mornings when you need them the most. Make sure to subscribe and click the bell so you can get notifications for all of our latest videos. Guys, let's jump into Monday Night Football, and I feel like this is the second or third week in a row that I've had to say it was kind of a dud of a game, although this time in the direction that was not so expected, in that the Rams are the ones getting blown out by the 49ers. 31-10 was the final score here. Let's start with the Rams side of things. Obviously, not a ton of positive takeaways in a game where you only score 10 points. Matt Stafford, 243 yards, 26 of 41, a touchdown. A couple of picks. We're not really concerned about him long term, I wouldn't imagine. I do want to ask about Darrell Henderson. Just 5 rushing attempts, 31 yards. Pat, I'll start with you. How concerned are you about Henderson, or is this just a blip in the radar?
I think it was just kind of a blip. Game script got away from them, and Sony Michel had one less carry than Darrell Henderson. Not a concern. They've been feeding him reliably all season, and they have not been on the short end of very many lopsided losses this year. So it's just kind of something we hadn't seen too much of before. And I don't think Henderson investors have to be too concerned.
Obviously, there's not much to talk about in regards to Cooper Kupp because he just continues to be dominant. 11 catches, 122 yards. Even in a game where the entire Rams offense looks really out of sorts, he was still utterly dominant as he has been all season. Obviously, still wide receiver one in fantasy. Pat, I'll ask you again about Tyler Higbee. I know you've sort of been on the Higbee train as a guy who should be getting more touchdowns because he's been getting targeted in the red zone a lot this season. 3 catches, just 20 yards, but he did get a score last night. How high do you think he can finish in the tight end rankings rest of season if he continues to get these looks in the red zone?
I think he's just going to still be ultimately tight end one, tight end two border territory. Not enough overall usage. The red zone usage has been nice. It is good that they look for him down there. Probably has fewer touchdowns than he should have, but he is not a consistent part of that passing game the way you would like. He's not a Mark Andrews, that's for sure. He's just not a guy who is going to consistently give you the sort of reception totals and yardage totals you need to feel good about him in your lineup every week.
First of all, I appreciate you picking a Raven, so thank you very much for that. Dan, Odell Beckham Jr., 2 catches, 18 yards. Like, obviously, just his first game. He's only been there a couple of days. Do you have any takeaways from this game from his perspective?
No. I mean, I know fantasy managers were not excited about the Robert Woods injury, but I mean, like, sort of saying, oh, look, Beckham might. I got a lot of start sick questions, Pat. I don't know about you on Sunday morning about Beckham. And I was like, no. I mean, you can't walk into this offense cold and expect to be a big part of the game plan, regardless of any injury. Now they have a bye, so he'll get more acclimated to it. And then I think he'll probably, with the Woods injury, be somebody who you can most likely start kind of most weeks, but I'm not jumping over the moon for him. I'd still rather have Van Jefferson, who didn't have a good game in this one, should have had a touchdown, but just played poorly. But no specific takeaways from this one to Beckham. If you were expecting anything from Beckham in this game, you were doing fantasy wrong.
Elijah Mitchell, 27 rushes, 91 yards. Obviously, any running back getting 27 rushing attempts in a Kyle Shanahan offense is going to be valuable. Not the biggest game given those numbers, but still, he's somebody that's obviously a must start whenever he's healthy at this point. He's clearly established himself as such. Dan, I will stick with you and just ask briefly on Deebo Samuel, 36 rushing yards and a touchdown, 97 receiving yards and a touchdown. And I saw a stat on Twitter earlier today that according to Pro Football Reference, he's the first player ever, at least since they've been tracking, to have 5 carries and a touchdown and 5 catches and a touchdown all in the same game. And he's somebody that I've been a little slow to come around on. Not that I think he's not talented or worth starting or anything like that, but I haven't quite, in just in my own personal opinion, put him in that very clear wide receiver one range. Do you think he's getting close to that at the point where he should be considered up with some of the elites at the position?
I think he's been that way for a long time. I don't think this is something. My hesitancy on Debo was the fact that it was just like, ooh, this calf injury looks kind of, we don't know. We're going to see how it is. And then he just comes out and he dominates. And you did want to see what happened with George Kittle healthy and Brandon Ayuk becoming a bigger focal point of the offense. None of it matters. Again, he was off the injury report this week. So that gives me sort of great confidence in him going forward. And he's a guy who has a history going back to college of these soft tissue injuries. So really good to see him continuing to play. And really, no, I mean, I have him ranked sixth rest of season at wide receiver. That might be too low, you know, at this point, but he is an elite fantasy wide receiver up top, near as good as you can get. So zero concerns at this point.
You did mention George Kittle there. He did have a touchdown, obviously a top three tight end going forward rest of season, assuming he stays on the field. Guys, we've got over 1 million teams synced to our My Playbook tool, so don't forget to sync your leagues for free and get access to great tools like our cheat sheets, league power rankings, analyzer tools, start sit assistance, and more. And in My Playbook, the trades continue to get very, very interesting. We've actually got some really big names on our most traded players list today, so that'll be fun, sort of some blockbuster deals here. Let's hop right into it. First up is somebody set to return from injury, possibly, probably this week against the Cowboys, and that's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He missed five straight games, though in his last two full games before getting hurt, he did go over 100 yards both times. Obviously, Darrell Williams has filled in well in the Chiefs' backfield. So, Pat, I'll start with you. Do you think CEH being on this list has more to do with managers looking to buy or looking to sell on him right now? What would you do?
Well, I think it has to do with the ambiguous valuation of him. And it seems like those guys who have like wildly fluctuating assessments from different fantasy managers are the most traded, because those guys are easily, when manager sees something one way, another sees something another way. A lot of people are probably still considering CEH a running back too. I don't know if he is. I think it's going to be sort of a shared workload with Williams and CEH once CEH gets back. I don't think it's going to be a full bore CEH show. So I can understand why, you know, people looking for running back help, seeing this guy who's a name and, you know, thinking he can provide them with help. But the people who've been rostering CEH probably know a little better and, you know, are anxious to take whatever they can for him at this point.
And where is he in your rest of season rankings, Pat?
Oh, man, he is in wide running back three territory, I think, toward the lower end.
Dan, are you buying, selling, or holding on Edwards-Helaire? And where is he in your rest of season rankings?
First of all, I despise people trading injured players, that's the question, Pat. I don't know about you. I get that so many, and I'm like, dude, it's really your risk tolerance of what you want. But Pat's like, there are people love to trade the injured players because they either think that they're getting the steal, right? Or be like, ha ha, value lower because injured. Or they're like, oh God, I got to get rid of this guy because I can't start him. I'm very torn on CEH. I do have him a little higher than Pat, but he is in RB3 range. I think I have him 27th. Overall, so it is something where, look, you know, I think it's very difficult to imagine that CH comes back and he's just the guy and there's no Darrell Williams. By the way, Darrell Williams was already factoring in even when CH was there. He was taking a lot of the goal line work and carving out a bigger role. He's factored into the passing game way more than CH ever had when he was this season, lately especially. I do wonder whether or not that helps the offense a little bit more, because Clyde Edwards-Helaire can obviously function as a pass catcher. And if they do lean a little bit more into targets towards the running backs to sort of, you know, escape this, you know, cover two, you know, defense that people are running at this point, that would just bolster the rest of season outlook on CH, even with Darrell Williams taking work aside from him. But long story short, he is an RB3 for me. I don't think you can value him as an RB2, because I do think Williams has done nothing to suggest that he should be cast aside entirely once CEH returns.
Yeah, you talk about like CEH getting back to being the guy. He really has never been truly like the guy, at least for any sustained period of time since getting into the NFL. So yeah, there's not really that high of a ceiling that people might expect that he's even coming back to. Throughout the show, we're going to be offering some trade comparisons that are pulled from our My Playbook data. These comparisons are some of the most popular accepted trades for these guys since Sunday's games. And since Dan always asks me, yes, these are all actual trades that have actually happened in real life. So make sure if you are in your league and looking to make a trade, you at least send out the offer. Worst thing they can do is say no. Actually, the worst thing they can do is ignore it, but that always bothers me. Dan, would you trade CEH for TJ Hockenson if you needed a tight end?
Is this a real trade that happened, Ryan? Did this actually? I'm sorry. Okay.
Fun fact, it is.
Okay. So I probably would not do that if I had any remotely competent tight end. And I say that just because this, I think the gap between the Hockenson level tight end and Dan Arnold is out there getting 65 yards every single week. Like Hunter Henry scores 17 touchdowns a week. I think we have enough there where we can get by on it. So unless you're really desperate for a tight end, in which case I think that's a fair trade. Generally speaking, I'll just always lean towards the running back and having a guy who I can start. So I will decline that trade personally.
Pat, how about CEH for Cole Beasley and Robbie Anderson?
So that basically just comes down to Cole Beasley straight up. And I don't think I would do that as much as I'm kind of intrigued by Cole Beasley as the cover two shell beater for teams that try to play that way against the Bills and sort of the extension of the running game that he can be. I don't think he has quite as much value as the running back, as Dan said. I mean, you want, even if you're disappointed with CEH, he is a running back who's going to get touches, and there's always value to those guys. But I would have taken the Hockenson deal. I would have personally taken that if it's like if I was trying to roll with Dan Arnold or Tyler Conklin or someone like that. I think I would have taken that deal.
And I look, let's fight because everybody loves people getting upset. And we were joking before we started recording that Pat and I just have very, very similar views in the way we analyze fantasy football, which gives me great comfort because I respect Pat immensely. The reason I don't have concerns about TJ Hockenson. He's now sort of starting to drop into the level for me just because of the futility of the Lions offense. And don't forget, Jared Goff, who we're like clinging to Jared Goff, is now dealing with an oblique injury. So who the heck knows what we're going to see from this Lions offense. I do think that these tight ends, these lower tier tight ends, are working their way into being like, you know what, I feel okay about you. And Hockenson, you know, other than that, you know, obviously he had this weird game where he didn't get any of the targets and he had 31 targets in the three previous games. I get it. But I think it is still something where I feel okay about these low-end tight ends better than I think I should. I think the gap between them and Hockenson is a little closer than most.
They might have a similar floor to Hockenson, but I can't shake the feeling that Hockenson's ceiling, if he were to take that next step, is still right up there with the best of the best of the position. Right, Pat?
I think so. I mean, it's the target thing, and it was just such a complete anomaly, I think, in Week 10 that he was just skunked in the passing game the way he was. When they've got, you know, the receivers, like Trinity Benson is their number three receiver right now. Like, it's just a completely non-viable wide receiver core. And, you know, Hockenson is so important in that. It was just a really weird game, you know, with the weather in Pittsburgh, the 30-plus rushing attempts for DeAndre Swift. Like, things were just so weird. I think we kind of have to cast out that game as far as the way we perceive Hockenson's value.
By the way, the one thing I will say is like the Lions have not scored 20 points since week one. So there isn't a lot of touchdown equity with
true.
Them. Hockenson has not scored a touchdown since week two. He has broken 66 yards twice since then. It's just a guy who I love, TJ Hockenson. I'm not at all saying anything negative about his talent. I am just saying at this point, I just don't think the gap between him, and it will be reflected in this week's trade chart, I don't think the gap between him and these other tight ends is good enough to give up a guy who, by the way, Pat and I are like, nah, flex, where flex, it's a running back, right? We are dying for running backs at all times. So even a flex running back like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, to me, I'm just going to hold in that situation.
I guess really I should have included TJ Hockenson on this most traded player. That's what the conversation we wanted to have.
It's funny you mentioned that. I've got one out in the air right now. I'm trying to, I've got a league where I'm just ruined at quarterback and I'm trying to get Jalen Hurts for TJ Hockenson from a very tight end needy team. And just, fingers crossed that this guy accepts the deal. Cause I also don't ask me how I have Kittle and Hockenson on the same team, just stocking up on Iowa tight ends. But yeah, so obviously Hockenson is a I'm surprised he's not on this week's list, Ryan.
you should use the trade analyzer to try and get that trade to go through. See if you can use that to help convince your opponent.
We have such a good team of developers. Is there a way that they can get the trade analyzer to send emails and messages when we like reject deals
That's a question for Dan. He's much higher up on the totem pole.
I have no power here whatsoever, but I'll raise it up the flagpole.
Do you guys wish that you could have had stock in a guy like Patrick Mahomes or Christian McCaffrey? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. Don't just draft your favorite players, start investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code PROS, then deposit funds into buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. The value of players will change based upon game performance and supply and demand, and you can trade your shares of players at any time as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Sign up with promo code PROS to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. One offense who you might want to be buying stock into, at least after the last couple of weeks, is the Eagles. And next up is another running back who might soon be coming off a multi-week injury, and that's Miles Sanders. Now, normally we don't pick guys who didn't just play on Sunday, but I think both runners, CEH and now Sanders, are actually pretty interesting situations. In Miles Sanders' case, he was a fairly big disappointment for much of the year, but in the last 3 weeks, the Eagles have averaged over 200 rushing yards per game. Of course, that's all happened without Sanders on the field. So do we think that the Eagles have figured out their ground game and can slide Sanders right back in once he's healthy? Or is his absence the reason that they've taken off? Dan, are you buying, selling, or holding?
I'm probably just holding here. I do think that this new Eagles philosophy, which every Eagles fan and fantasy manager probably was like, you guys should probably run the ball more early on when it was like Jalen Hurts. But my problem is I don't think they took off because Miles Sanders wasn't there or anything like that. I think this was just the commitment to the run. My question is a little bit similar to CEH. What happens now that Miles Sanders is going to come back? Does he step in and he's like, okay, you're the dude, go ahead. Are you going to take Jordan Howard, who I know it's Jordan Howard, but he's been very effective. Boston Scott, pretty effective. Forget about Kenneth Gainwell. So I have him ranked very similar to CEH, kind of like a mid-tier RB3 flex play for me. I think it's possible that he takes a big role here, but I also don't think he's going to have the backfield to himself. So again, positives in that I do think the Eagles are going to stay committed to the run. It's a pretty good schedule. I mean, after the Saints, they basically have nonstop, you know, NFC East opponents that you can run on. But also, I do think that these other guys are going to continue to factor in. So more of like an RB3 flex play for me.
Yeah, unlike the Chiefs, where it's just really Darrell Williams. How are they going to split up that timeshare? It's now there's four guys, because I know you said forget about Kenneth Gainwell. Not that you should be like rostering him or playing him or anything, but I definitely think there's a path to him being fantasy relevant later on in the year, just the way the Eagles ground game has gone the entire season. So there's really him, Boston Scott, Jordan Howard, and now Miles Sanders. Whenever he returns, you could really make the case for any of them on any given Sunday. So I agree, that's pretty difficult. Pat, are you buying, selling, or holding on Sanders? And where does he rank for you rest of season?
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on what Dan said here. And I'm glad you threw it to him first, because I didn't really have a good answer. I mean, sometimes the fantasy analyst has to admit to being stumped on a player, and I feel totally stumped on Miles Sanders right now. And the weird, Dan mentioned the non-usage of the running game earlier in the season. And I can remember the game against the Buccaneers in Philadelphia, where there were the facetious cheers from the crowd when they would hand the ball to Miles Sanders for like the third time in the game late in the third quarter. So yeah, they've obviously shifted offensive philosophy, which I think is encouraging if you are rostering Miles Sanders right now. So you're sort of waiting for that to see if he reascends to the number one spot, even though Jordan Howard and Boston Scott have been surprisingly effective these last couple of weeks.
Dan, I'll give you the first trade comparison to give Pat a little more time to gather his thoughts.
If it's TJ Hockenson, I'm out, by the way. I refuse to answer that.
I can assure you it's not. Would you trade Miles Sanders for Odell Beckham?
No, I don't think so. I don't have enough confidence in what we're going to see from Odell Beckham Jr. to give away a guy who I think I can probably start as a flex play at running back.
Pat, how about Miles Sanders and DeAndre Hopkins for Chase Edmonds and Elijah Mitchell?
No, I would want the Mitchell-Edmonds combo for sure, even though Edmonds is on IR. I mean, it's just Mitchell's the most valuable guy in that deal, I think, even with, you know, Hopkins' history. It's different there. He's not getting massive targets anymore. And, you know, we just, I don't know. Yeah, I want the running back
combo. And that is four different players who have all had injury issues at some point this season in some form or fashion.
Yeah, Dan would really hate that trade.
Yeah, stop it. Stop trading injured players, you people. Yeah.
One of our most traded receivers this week is actually Tyreek Hill, despite the fact that he's currently second in wide receiver scoring this season through 10 weeks, behind only, of course, Cooper Kupp. The Chiefs looked like the juggernaut we expected them to be this week, including Hill had 7 catches, 83 yards, 2 touchdowns. I have to assume both of you are either buying or holding. You wouldn't be selling on Hill, right? Dan, I'll start with you.
No, of course not. I'll trade Tyreek Hill if you're talking one for one for an elite running back and nothing less. Like, there's no reason to get away from the very few sort of caliber wide receiver that can guaranteed basically make a difference. So I'm certainly holding if I can.
Dan confirmed would trade TJ Hawkinson for Tyreek Hill.
Very clear. Very clear. Make that trade right now. And throw in an injured player just for good measure. Why not?
Pat, I assume you agree. Where's Hill in your rest of season rankings?
Very high. I think wide receiver 3, maybe, just behind Kupp and Adams. Absolutely agree with Dan here. Like, he is one of the guys you want to try to get. One of the guys who can be the coal in the engines toward a fantasy championship. The guy who can go on the sort of 2 or 3 week run that can propel you into a trophy position. So, I mean, those are the guys you're looking to add this time of year, not the guys you're looking to throw off. You know, maybe if you've got a lot of holes to patch earlier in the season and, you know, need to really send off a marquee player to get a multi-player package in return, sure, in week 2 or week 3, not now. You don't trade Tyreek Hill in week 11. And I think the people who dealt him last week are already pretty sad when, you know, he goes out and scores 2 touchdowns right away in their first game without him.
Dan, not that it's really actionable, but just out of curiosity, is he number 2 or number 3 for you rest of the season?
He is number 2. I vehemently disagree with Pat. He's number 2 for me. I have Cooper Kupp, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams. But what I will say is that, again, I will do the trade chart tonight. I think the final trade chart of the season. And although that is my ranking, all 3 will have the exact same trade value. So it's a distinction without a difference.
Well, you mentioned trading him for a top-level running back. So let me give you the first trade comparison here. Tyreek Hill for Joe Mixon, straight up.
Totally fine with that. If you need a running back, if you are okay at wide receiver, that is totally fair value to me.
I'll give you this one, Pat. Tyreek Hill for Hollywood Brown and David Montgomery.
If you were really hurting at running back, I would find that an acceptable deal to get Montgomery as a guy you could plug in. Because, you know, Hollywood's a good 80 cents on the dollar version of Tyreek Hill, 70 cents on the dollar. So I think that's a reasonable deal.
And that segues us nicely into our final most traded player, which is Hollywood Brown. Obviously, just a terrible all-around performance from the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. But even on a bad night, and with the Ravens receiving core at full strength for the first time all season, Hollywood still came away with 13 targets. So, Pat, are you buying, selling, or holding on Hollywood right now? And where does he rank in your rest of season rankings?
Yeah, another guy buying. I think he would, if his managers are discouraged by that performance. I don't think they should be. And I've talked about this, written about this in the primer, that I just think it's like all systems go for this Baltimore passing game because their defense is not what it used to be. Sorry, Ryan. The running game is not what it used to be. Sorry, Ryan. So, and we've seen like Lamar Jackson is averaging more pass attempts and more rushing attempts per game than he was last year. And those extra pass attempts, even with Rashad Bateman becoming a competent 7 to 8 target a game guy, even with Mark Andrews around still as a high volume tight end, there are plenty of targets in this passing game. And, you know, we have seen that that Hollywood Brown just needs like a couple of big connections a game to like really pay off.
I mean, Dan, what about
give him 13 targets? He's going to make a big play more often than not.
Definitely. Dan, what about you? Do you agree?
Yeah, you teased me last week because we were coming, you know, off the game. Maybe on Friday when we did our Dan and Ryan in the morning about Hollywood Brown, who obviously didn't have a great game, but he still saw, what, 13 targets? Yeah, I have him 11th the rest of season, and I've had him at that borderline wide receiver one. Again, Pat mentioned it. The increased pass targets that you're getting, his you know, production and his target share is not impacted by Rashad Bateman or Sammy Watkins or anything. He is the alpha in terms of the receiver. So, yeah, I'm buying him wherever I can.
Dan, would you trade DJ Moore for Hollywood Brown?
In a second. I'm willing to part with DJ Moore as much as I adore him as a player for his fantasy value, much less for me than Hollywood Brown.
Pat, I know you don't like challenge trades, but same question. DJ Moore for Hollywood Brown?
As much of a DJ Moore guy as I am, I would make that trade in a heartbeat. And then when it comes time to setting the board for 2022, I'll probably go right back to having DJ Moore ahead in my draft rankings. Yes. But for this year, there's no question.
DJ Moore for Hollywood Brown, it hits me right in the feels. A terp for a Raven. It's an exciting time for me as a fan. Now, I know listeners are hoping to win some of the cool gear that we're giving away with the help of our friends at Pristine Auction, but those aren't the only amazing deals over at Pristine Auction. They've got daily auctions with hundreds of cool items that are perfect for any fan cave for fans or managers of any player. They guarantee authenticity, and just as important, it's affordable. Most people think cool gear like this is beyond their means, but the truth is, a lot of these items are much more affordable than you might think, including a signed jersey from superstar wide receiver and Maryland alum and Maryland native Stephon Diggs. As of yesterday, the bidding on that item was under $50. They've got tons more on the site where it's quick and free to register and also free to bid. When you head to the site, enter Fantasy Pros, all one word, in the registration code field located at the top of the page. It's totally free, and when you use the code, you'll get a free $5 credit. So sign up at pristineauction.com today. Again, that's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. Let's move on to everybody's favorite segment, Buy Low and Sell High. Remember, when offering and accepting your own trades, be sure to check out Fantasy Pros' suite of tools like Trade Analyzer and Trade Finder to help you facilitate trades to help you win your league. Pat, I'll start with you. Give me your number one buy low running back right now.
I think it's Michael Carter, and he's surprisingly undervalued to me for the volume he's been getting. Like, over his last three games, 340 yards from scrimmage, two touchdowns, 19.3 touches a game. And really, I mean, that's a smaller sample. If you stretch that out over his last six games, I think he's averaged 13 carries a game. The target volume is there. And I know part of that is Mike White driven. He is just a check down machine. But, you know, Zach Wilson, to some extent, is still going to be dumping off to his running back. So, I mean, like, you can't get that excited about him just because the scoring potential isn't that great. You know, two touchdowns in the last three games, great, but we know the Jets aren't going to score a lot of touchdowns. Sorry, Dan. But still, this is the kind of, like, dependable volume. On a better team, it's a running back one profile, but even on the Jets, it's a solid running back two profile. And if you're hurting at running back, like, this is a guy I would go after right now.
Dan and I just keep catching strays from Pat over here. First the Ravens, now the Jets. It's unbelievable.
I planned this all, Ryan. This was my way to just jab you guys repeatedly throughout this show.
So would you go as far then, Pat, as to trade a Terry McLaurin for Michael Carter?
I think I would at this point. You know, McLaurin still is the guy in search of a soulmate at quarterback and hasn't found him yet. So I think I would.
How about Cordarrelle Patterson and Christian Kirk for Mike Williams and Michael Carter?
Ooh. With Patterson hurts. I mean, I guess I'd rather have the – well, Williams is kind of banged up too. So, oh, man, that's kind of a tricky – a lot of layers to that one, Ryan. Yeah. You're putting me on the spot here. I think I'd probably take the Carter-Williams side of that.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to keep putting you on the spot if you keep making comments about the Ravens. Dan, who is your buy low running back?
Look, guys, I only have one philosophy, and it's trade for injured players, okay? Get them involved in trades. I know I'm going against the grain here, but I'm going to call Saquon Barkley, who is my buy low guy, a quasi-injured player, because I do finally expecting to be back this week. We are way past the point where we thought his minor ankle sprain would keep him out. Then again, I think the COVID thing kind of delayed him, and now they're off a bye. And look, I don't know, man. I get questions in our Discord, fantasypros.com/chat, about trading Saquon Barkley, and the values that people are putting on him is just not high at all. And Pat, we discussed that they have the Bucks this week, right? So I bet you people are kind of worried about that. Nobody really wants to start him in this one. But A, the Bucks' run defense hasn't been quite as formidable as it was earlier in the season. And they just lost Vita Vea, who I assume is going to be out for this game. So that's going to possibly have a bigger game for him. They have a pretty, you know, a decent schedule for running backs going forward. They get the Eagles. They allow the fifth most fantasy points to running backs. Dolphins are middle of the road. Then the Chargers, they allow the fourth most points to running backs. Cowboys, middle of the road. Then they allow the Eagles again. So they have some pretty soft matchups coming up after this week. And if Devontae Booker can succeed with this team and this offensive line, then Saquon certainly can. Like, let's not forget how elite a talent he is. And you look at Booker's touches, 19, 16, 16, 20, 24. You give Saquon Barkley 20 touches a game. And I don't think this is a situation where it's like, well, Devontae Booker's really earned a big role here. I think if you lean into Saquon Barkley, he can very, very easily be a solid RB1 for your team. And I think you can get him for much less. So I'm willing to buy. And I think this might be the last chance, because if he has a good game this weekend against the Bucks, people are going to freak out over him. So I would be willing to take the risk and move now.
So are you at all nervous, not necessarily about this current injury, but just what is now a pretty prevalent injury history for Saquon? At a certain point, you kind of feel like a guy might actually just be injury prone, which is not a label you want.
I mean, you look at this latest one, he had his foot stepped on, like, while he was, you know, coming to a stop. I'm not going to blame him for that. And, you know, there's injury prone. I'm not ready to draw that conclusion yet. If you do have concerns, I think it would be something where I would factor that into his dynasty value. We've got 5 or 6 games left this year. If he's coming back, I'm willing to gamble on the fact that he'll be able to stay healthy. And again, this is mainly because of the perception that's on him in the market, which is he's injury prone. I don't want to rely on this guy. He's got the Bucks. This is now the time where you have to take risks in fantasy. Like, that's what it is. Unless you are sitting there with an absolutely dominant team, like I am in our Fantasy Pros Insiders League, of course, then you have to take risks. And this is a risk for me, given the upside I'm willing to take.
Yeah, in that league, only 2 teams have to face each other twice. And of course, you are the person I have to face twice. And I will give you credit, your team.
And if it makes you feel better, I have 1 loss in that league, and it was only because Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews scored like 70 points combined on that Monday night game, and I lost to a team by like a point. I had a 70 point lead, which I know everybody wants to hear about my league, so let's talk about it more. But again, I'm ready. Give me your Saquon Barkley. I'm taking all the trades.
Would you trade here? I've got 2 of them for you, and they're both 1 wide receiver for Saquon, so I'll give you both at the same time. Tell me if you would take either, neither, or just one of them. Stephon Diggs or Chris Godwin straight up for Saquon?
I don't think I could trade Stephon Diggs. Here's what I'll say, okay? These trades, if I saw this trade go across my wire and a team was very, very strong at wide receiver and weak at running back, I would not say, oh man, you got fleeced for this trade. In a vacuum, Stephon Diggs is worth more than a Saquon Barkley coming back. And probably Chris Godwin is a little bit too, but I think Chris Godwin for Saquon Barkley for me at this point is probably pretty fair. Diggs is worth a little bit more to me than Saquon Barkley.
Pat, give me your sell high running back.
Antonio Gibson coming off the big game. I mean, we had just gotten so used to these lines of 13 carries for 56 yards and 2 catches. So people are maybe going to be excited about the game he just had with the 24, 23 carries against the Buccaneers, the 2 touchdowns, like the big rushing load, his biggest rushing load of the season. But I feel like there's nowhere to go for Gibson with this role right now, with McKissick continuing to get the passing down work, because we're just seeing the ceiling of 2 catches a game for Gibson. He had 5 targets in week 1. No more than 3 targets in any game since. And without that passing volume, you know, behind a line that's a little banged up, I think they might be getting Sam Cosmi back this week, but they lost Chase Roulier, their center, a team that's not always in positive game scripts because their defense is unexpectedly bad. And now they've lost Chase Young. So it's just, I don't think it's a recipe for sustained success for Gibson. As much as I like the player, I think this is a good time to get out. when he's coming off a real splashy performance.
Yeah, he did have 24 rushing attempts. The other running backs combined for just 6 in the game. But as you mentioned, he's obviously not getting any work in the passing game. That was his first game with at least 10 PPR fantasy points, which is not that much in PPR, for his first time since week 5. So obviously, that was pretty game script dependent, I think. Would you sell Gibson for DJ Moore?
Oh, boy. I guess I would if I needed a receiver and just cross my fingers that Cam Newton can, like, kickstart DJ's value.
What about for Deontay Johnson?
Oh, I would take Deontay Johnson for him in a heartbeat.
Dan, who's your sell high?
It's Zeke. And I had Pat and I have a segment on your on our Sunday night recap show where I have to take issue with his rest of season rankings. And he had Zeke 12th and I had him 8th. And Zeke came off a 2-touchdown performance. And I looked at my rest of season rankings and I tweaked them and I moved Zeke to 12th. And Pat, as usual, is correct. And it's obnoxious to me, but whatever. I'm fine living in his shadow. Look, the bottom line is Zeke, there are issues that we can think about with Zeke. Number one, he's a little banged up. And I think we did see that, you know, with his knee. He did get work here. But Tony Pollard looked good again and got involved a little bit more. I know it was a blowout game, but still, Pollard is certainly capable. They'll probably want to keep Zeke as fresh as possible. And the return of Michael Gallup really just makes his passing attack almost unstoppable at this point. I can't wait to see them play the Chiefs this weekend. So I do think that they could lean into the pass a little bit more. And you probably are going to need the goal line work, which you'll get some with Zeke. But I think coming off a 2-touchdown performance in a game where he didn't run all that well and he lost a fumble is a time where you try to sell him as sort of the mid-tier RB1 at a time where RB1s are just gold. And again, I'm not giving him away. He's still an RB1 for me going forward, but I do think that you can sell him a little bit higher than that as more closer to like a mid-tier RB1 than a lower-tier RB1.
The thing that's nice about Zeke is just the consistency, at least 15 points in half PPR in 6 of his 9 games this year, which you're not getting that from most running backs in this era. I'll just give you one trade comparison here. Zeke for Michael Carter and T. Higgins.
I don't think I can do that. Now, I'm not as high on Michael Carter as Pat is necessarily. I do wonder what we're going to see here with Tevin Coleman back and healthy and how much it changes with Zach Wilson. And Higgins is fine, but he's a wide receiver too. That sort of production is good, but a little replaceable. So I think I would want a little bit more than that for Zeke. Again, that's a sell and that's fine, but I'm looking to sell high.
Pat, let's move into the receivers. Who is your top buy low wideout?
Tyler Lockett. He's been under 60 receiving yards in 6 of his last 7 games. The one exception was sort of a weird 12-catch, 142-yard game in, I believe, week 9 with Geno Smith. And then we just like saw the timing totally off with Russell Wilson and his receivers in Russ's first game back. And like one of them, there was a play that could have very well slammed the buy low window shut where Lockett was wide open down the left sideline. Russell Wilson is like a beat or two slow in seeing it, throws over, and the safety comes over and breaks up the play for the Packers. So, yeah, I just think like the Lockett, we saw the Lockett-Russell Wilson combination working magic early in the season. I mean, if you had Lockett through the first 3-4 weeks, you were just absolutely delighted with what you were getting every week. I mean, he looked like a top 5 guy. You know, we saw a little of that last year. Lockett fell off after a while. But I think ultimately, even if it's a bit of a roller coaster ride, I think Lockett with Wilson together, that's like at least mid-range wide receiver 2 value. Lockett maybe hasn't been living up to that lately. So I think his managers might be willing to include him in a deal. Probably a good time to pounce.
So how much are you attributing the bad day in week 10 to Wilson's shaking off the rust? And how much do you attribute to, and notice I'm about to say something nice about your team, Pat, a Packers defense that has now shut down Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, and Russell Wilson over the course of the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I think the Packers are like 3rd in fantasy points allowed to wide receivers. And it's just been, you know, Dan and I talked about how the Packers defense under Joe Barry has just been phenomenal lately. So that's part of it for sure. But Russ did look pretty bad. Just a lot of more off-target throws from Russ in that game than you would normally see from him in a month, I think.
Would you trade, and again, I know you don't like challenge trades, but Tyler Lockett for Adam Thielen?
I would rather have Lockett than Thielen, yes.
How about Tyler Lockett for Javonte Williams?
I think Dan and I have talked about this. As much as people want to wish cast with Javonte Williams and make him the lead back, he's a committee back. So I would take Lockett.
Dan, which receiver are you buying right now?
It's basically a slightly higher end version of Tyler Lockett, and that is Terry McLaurin, who Pat referenced earlier. They've got kind of the same issues, right? You're either walking home with 100 yards and a touchdown or a completely just non-existent performance. And there are more reasons to be concerned with McLaurin. He does not have Russell Wilson throwing him the ball. That is unfortunate, of course. But he's averaging like 9 targets a game, man. And these aren't the Dwayne. I mean, I talked about it with Tag so much last year with Logan Thomas, where I was basically like, I love Logan Thomas. And he was like, you're an idiot. And it was very much about the fact that he was like, you're excited about the targets, but they're targets from Dwayne Haskins. And I was like, maybe it won't always be from Dwayne Haskins. And there are different targets out there. Targets from Taylor Heinicke are not targets from Dwayne Haskins. Like, this is something where Heinicke's at least a sort of quasi-competent quarterback. And this is a little bit of a leap of faith, I admit, which I do think Tyler Lockett would be as well, because we just haven't seen the consistency from him. But Terry McLaurin is one of the most talented wide receivers in the game, and he'll go up and he'll get contested catches. He's one of the leaders in contested catches in all of football. It's not even a great schedule necessarily for wide receivers, but he's a guy who, look, every week when I do my rest of season rankings, I'm like, okay, I guess I have to move you down. But I look at some of these other wide receivers and I can't move them down much past like borderline wide receiver one territory. And I think people are getting pretty sick of them, as they are Tyler Lockett. So that presents the buying opportunity if you are willing to take the leap of faith, which I am. So Terry McLaurin, my buy low wide receiver.
To your point about being very hit or miss, he only has 3 games all season with even double-digit points in half PPR. Yep. In all 3 of those games, he went over 20. So when he's hit, he's really hit. He doesn't have a single game this season with between 10 and 20 fantasy points in half-point PPR. So very much all or nothing, but more often he's been nothing.
I mean, DeAndre Carter has touchdowns in back-to-back games. Like, yeah. just lean into Terry McLaurin a little bit more. He's so elite of a wide receiver. That, again, this is just something, this is at this point in the season, guys, this is the way I view it. There are times where you have to look at a player and you can't fully justify it from the numbers that they have put up or what is happening. And you just have to trust that either the player's talent or some other thing is going to have them come to a strong finish. 9 targets a game. I have to lean into it. So I'm buying still.
Yeah, and to be clear, McLaurin is an absolute star. Like, I live in the D.C. area. They love him here. He's a bona fide number one receiver. It's very much this is a Taylor Heinicke offense. It's Washington's offense, parentheses Taylor's version, to go with the Taylor Swift stuff this week, which I don't even listen to her. But it's not an issue with McLaurin. He is absolutely phenomenal. Would you trade, if you needed wide receiver help and actually had running backs, DeAndre Swift for McLaurin?
I think that is giving up too much to get Terry McLaurin just because of running backs. But again, we are in a position right now where when you make trades, it is so team specific. And if you are swimming in running backs, I could live with it. In a vacuum, Swift is worth more than Terry McLaurin. But if you absolutely sort of were just desperate for a wide receiver and you were swimming in running back depth, I'd be okay with it. But in a vacuum, that's too much.
Pat, who's your sell high receiver?
Now, I was hoping for a better game from him last night to make him more of a sell-high target, but it's Odell Beckham Jr. And as Dan mentioned, there was just this deluge of Odell Beckham, should I start him, questions, and pretty much every answer for me was a no, no matter who the other guy was. You know, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, no, start MVS. It's the same Josh Gordon phenomenon that we've seen for so long. There's just such a name brand value. And I know in fantasy baseball analysis, there is the belief that once you show a skill, you own that skill and you've got it for the rest of your life. But like, it's been a long time since we saw the skills that OBJ was displaying with Eli Manning when they were both on the Giants. You know, Eli Manning is doing TV now. It's like, the Eli Manning days are in the past, and Beckham is playing with 2 bad shoulders. He's got like a severe AC joint sprain in his right shoulder. And apparently it's been like popping in and out of place during games all season. And he's got a left shoulder injury of some sort. So it seems like a stretch that he's even going to be able to finish the season playing every game. And you know, they've got Cooper Kupp in place. Like, he's not going to displace Cooper Kupp. Van Jefferson might be a better receiver at this point. I don't know, man. Like, if there's anyone who's still buying into the name brand value, sell, sell, sell.
I don't know if you guys remember this, but in like 2017, Odell famously, he looked at the solar eclipse without sunglasses. He like put it on his Instagram and he's like squinting at it. And everybody was like, what are you doing? Like, you shouldn't be doing that. I actually, on the anniversary of that this past summer in August, I looked it up and his stats, he's played roughly the same number of games before and after. He has like, he had like twice as many touchdowns before, twice as many catches. He was so much better before he looked into the sun. So I'm not saying anything. But the numbers do sort of speak for themselves there. I will ask you, Odell, for a guy we talked about, Miles Sanders.
Oh, give me Miles.
I asked sort of the reverse of that for Dan earlier, but you agree with him on Sanders. And I assume you would take T. Higgins over Odell.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm a big T. Higgins guy. But Ryan, do you have any more conspiracy theories like that? I'm fascinated by, like, if you've got anything else, man, just keep rolling with that the rest of the show. Like, that's what people want
to
hear.
We made a graphic about it to post on social, and nobody like really reacted to it. But it was on a Saturday, like over the summer, so it's like people weren't really fully in the fantasy mode. So I had to get it in now that people are actually listening to the podcast. It might come to my side on the conspiracy theory, because I do, again, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, Dan, who is your sell high receiver?
It's Michael Pittman Jr., who I love, but Pittman has a perception. People love, fantasy managers love a guy like Michael Pittman Jr. who can make highlight reel catches and is just a physical specimen and has a few big games when people are noticing. But I think that the reality of his fantasy value does not match that perception. He has played 10 games. He has seen more than 8 targets 3 times. He can get it done. And Pat and I have talked about this. With his 5 or 6 targets a game that he sees, but it's a lot harder to do in an offense that really wants to rely on the run. He still has his bye coming up, by the way, which is something that, again, I harp on a lot. That's a big part of your rest of season value. He's going to play one fewer game than the vast majority of players and receivers that are left in the NFL. And again, T.Y. Hilton is back, and I know he didn't do much in this most recent game. He didn't even play that much. But he still saw 5 targets against the Jaguars. And I do think that he is going to see targets and that is going to, again, put a hard cap on Pittman's value. People love him. I think you can swap him for Terry McLaurin, for example. Like, I've seen sort of people suggest that. I would prefer McLaurin. And that is the buy low, sell high sort of trade that I'm trying to make here.
Yeah, I actually wrote down in my notes when you said Pittman, I had wrote his name with like 4 question marks, because I was really surprised, because it feels like the last like 3 or 4 Tuesday shows that we've done, we just keep talking about what a legitimate stud he's become, a future and maybe current wide receiver 1. So I think those are some pretty good reasons that you could move him if that value is perceived to be a lot higher by someone else. So the first question I'll give you is Michael Pittman for James Conner.
If you're desperate for a running back, maybe. I just have more... The bottom line with Connor, and maybe we'll talk about him in a little bit, is just that he might have one more game as sort of this lead back, and it might be with Colt McCoy as the quarterback, because I have a bye the week after that. Then Chase Edmonds will be eligible to come back. So I'd probably just hold Pittman in that sense.
You always ask me,
every question you ask me is always like, oh, all right, you want to sell high, huh? How about this guy? I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. Oh, you want to buy low? How about this guy? I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. So I was apparently terrible at this.
I was
podcast.
Literally just about to say, I hope you've noticed that every single time you pick a player in one direction, I give you a trade that makes you say the opposite.
Yeah, can you give me like, would you trade, Pittman for like Tyreek Hill or something like that? Yeah, I think, look, I will say this again. I think that a Michael Pittman, Terry McLaurin trade is a trade that you can do. And if you do a 1-for-1 trade, which I hate 1-for-1 trade for people in the same tier, and I would personally prefer Terry McLaurin in that sort of trade. So that's sort of the sell high that I'm going for, not James Conner.
Michael Pittman for TJ Hockenson, who says no. Let's move to the rest of season rankings, which can help fans value both their own players and also players that they are considering trading for or away. I want to start with you here, Dan. Who is your biggest riser in the rest of the season running back rankings, and who is your biggest faller?
I will put it out there that Pat stole my answer to, I think, every single one of these questions. And again, it is just because he is more diligent and got you the names in advance. So I'm going to list James Robinson here as my running back riser. Again, people outside of injuries, like AJ Dillon, of course, but whatever. James Robinson, and again, AJ Dillon is a guy we can talk about. But James Robinson, for me, goes from RB19 to RB11. He was still very effective in this game. Healthy. I mean, he got 16 touches. He got 84 yards. Again, a difficult matchup here against the Colts. And the big thing for me is he's coming off an injury. He's questionable coming in. Carlos Hyde gets 3 touches in the game. So I think they will still continue to lean into him as the absolute workhorse. And now that he showed that he was healthy, he goes back to being an RB1 for me.
Yeah, he had a decent fantasy output despite facing arguably the best run defense in football, like you said, in an unfavorable game script and coming off that heel injury that kept him out of practice during the week. So is he like situation proof at this point?
I think so. I mean, and I think he has been for a while. As soon as they stopped giving Carlos Hyde sort of more of the work, Robinson is one of the more underrated backs, in my opinion, in fantasy football. And I think people still look for a reason. I don't know about you guys. The way I always feel like it is people are always like, James Robinson is a guy who I had never heard of before he randomly exploded last year. There's got to be a reason he stinks. Give me any reason to jump on that, and I'm going to jump on that. And I think that those are the types of guys who are undervalued in the market, whereas the perception of them just doesn't match it. For me, he's out there every single time, basically an RB1.
Yeah, it's the pedigree or lack thereof. People, it's the same thing in the reverse of first-round picks. Like, people will always give them chances, unless your name is N'Keal Harry. Who is your biggest faller at running back?
My biggest faller this week is James Conner, who, again, I had pushed up to basically RB16. He's down to RB23 for me. Again, he had the touchdown deodorant, as Pat would say, and that's Scott Pianowski, I believe. And he might only have a single game left now without Chase Edmonds because they have a bye coming up the week after this. And I'm not expecting Kyler Murray to be able to suit up here, which is going to hurt James Conner, despite what we saw 2 weeks ago. It's now a matchup against an embarrassed Seahawks team that allows the third fewest fantasy points to opposing running back. So I just get out while I could and sell him at sort of mid-tier RB2 prices after he had a decent game in this one. But he is falling in my rankings.
Couple of trade comparisons here. Would you trade Patrick Mahomes for James Robinson, assuming you had a capable backup quarterback?
Would I trade Patrick Mahomes for James Robinson?
Assuming you have, I usually use Ryan Tannehill as the line, as like sort of a capable backup, but obviously not like an elite level quarterback to fill in the spot.
We're in a single quarterback league in this one?
Yes.
I would do that, yes. I will almost always trade a quarterback if I have any semblance of a decent backup for a running back that I can start each and every week.
In Superflex, would you still make the trade?
No, I don't think so. I think in Superflex, you have to value Mahomes as like basically a top 2 or 3 pick at that point. So, or, you know, maybe a little lower than that now that he's fallen down a little bit, but still higher than Robinson.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. James Conner and Nick Chubb for Najee Harris.
Ooh, I guess it would depend on who my RB2 is and who's filling in for James Conner. But,
I will say, I don't know what this league format is, but just to make it interesting, let me call it PPR. Because Najee's going to get a lot of catches.
Yeah, I think in PPR, I'll probably go ahead and pull that trigger there. With Najee, just the volume is so glorious. And I love Nick Chubb as well. I assume he's going to be back this week, but especially in PPR. Thank you for clarifying that. Ryan, I do think that in PPR, you got to make that move with Najee's involvement in the passing game.
Pat, which running back is moving up in your rest of season rankings and who's moving down?
So the guy I stole here from Dan and who he, you know, tweets me back by mentioning him in advance to steal my thunder was A.J. Dillon. Yeah. I mean, obviously with the sprained MCL for Aaron Jones, which generally a 2 to 4 week injury, but it might be on the longer side of that for Jones, who I believe has a history of sprained MCLs, maybe 2 previous ones on the same leg. So, they play the Vikings and the Rams next. Not exactly great matchups. And then they have a week 13 bye. So maybe he isn't going to be able to fully cash in on the way on the Jones injury the way he would have in easier matchups or if they didn't have that late bye. But Dillon is going to get a lot of touches. Like, it'll be a shock if he doesn't get like 20 to 25 touches the next 2 weeks. And that's sort of a load in a good offense, high scoring behind a good offensive line can be just, I mean, he's a running back 1 for the next 2 weeks, even in tough matchups. And there's just no one behind him now. I think it's Patrick Taylor, a UDFA out of Memphis, who I don't think has a professional touch yet. And, you know, unless they sign anyone, and even if they do bring in a Duke Johnson or someone, I mean, there's not going to be a lot of work for them behind Dillon the next 2 weeks. 2 weeks plus.
You talk about pedigree. A.J. Dillon was a second round pick, so obviously somebody that once he gets onto the field, you'd expect to see that talent shine through. Would you trade him for DeAndre Hopkins?
No. I would rather have Dillon.
And who's your biggest faller in the running back rest of season rankings?
It is Damian Harris with the emergence of Ramondre Stevenson. There is a chance that it goes right back to Damian Harris dominating touches and maybe Ramondre just replaces Brandon Bolden as the primary passing down back. But man, I mean, ever since Corey Dillon, it's been very hard to try to predict how the Patriots are going to use their running backs. And I would have to think at this point that Ramondre Stevenson has forced some sort of committee, which is, you know, a far cry from what we were seeing a month ago with Damian Harris. So he has lost a lot of value.
Yeah, obviously, very few people have won betting on Bill Belichick backfields. So it's sort of difficult to try and guess what we're going to see week to week. But obviously, Ramondre Stevenson just was, he looked legitimately beastly, as you tweeted out, Pat, during that performance on Sunday. Would you trade Damian Harris and Rob Gronkowski for DeAndre Hopkins?
Yeah, I'd take Hopkins there.
Okay, and Dan, who is your biggest riser at receiver and your biggest faller?
By the way, I do want to make a correction to something I said earlier, which I realized when it came out of my mouth. I said, I don't think that was, I think I got confused for a second. I mentioned that the Seahawks allow a ton, few points to running backs. They actually allow a ton of fantasy points to running backs, but they're actually very good against the run. They're 11th in defensive DVOA against the rush, which is why I'm not that excited about Connor as they come off the embarrass here, and they have been much better against running backs lately. Now I have corrected myself. I can move on to wide receivers. My biggest riser is Jalen Waddle, who I'm going to admit to you guys, I look for any reason to move up Jalen Waddle because I love him. He moved up from wide receiver 28, which admittedly was factoring in the fact that Jacoby Brissett might be under center for a little while, to wide receiver 21. So I think he is just a solid wide receiver to start with. Tua back, I think his, you know, you've seen his ADOT go way up when Tua is there. Tua looked pretty competent coming in against the Ravens, despite the finger. He gets the Jets twice in his next four matchups. And I realize that once upon a time, the Jets secondary was like, look at these guys. Okay, playing all right, doing fine. But he is, they are not a defense that you want to avoid in any way, shape, or form for wide receivers. He always sees the targets. I just look at the landscape. We talk about DJ Moore, you know, right? Like at some point, I was like, why am I doing this? What's the point of ranking these guys this way? So Waddle moves up for me to wide receiver 21. So that's my biggest riser of the week.
Jalen Waddle and Pat Freiermuth for Mark Andrews and Elijah Moore.
Ooh, I am going. That's a good one. I'm going to stick with the Jalen Waddle side, and maybe it is something where I love Pat Freiermuth a bit too much, but I do, and I'm fading Elijah Moore a little bit, which I talked about yesterday on the Waiver Wire show. Just I'm a little concerned about some things despite the touchdown that I saw, so I'll go with the guaranteed wide receiver. I wonder what, Pat, what do you think about that? Would you go on the other side? I feel like you might take the Andrews side on that.
No, I think I would go with the Waddle side also.
Okay.
Very it's good. Close, though.
First of all, trade question, Ryan.
Way I was going to say, I'll thank you to not sound surprised by a good trade question, Dan.
I feel like you're like, oh, he's your biggest riser, but would you trade him for Christian McCaffrey? No, I wouldn't do that. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Now, Dan, your biggest faller, you told me on last week's show that you were one bad game from this guy away from finally dropping him from your top 20 rankings. It sounded like that finally happened.
Yeah, Mike Williams is dunsy for me. And it's regardless of the knee injury, which again, there's beat writers reports that he is suffering from the knee injury. There's Brandon Staley coming out and saying like, he's totally fine. Doesn't factor in whatsoever. I really don't care whether it's your knee injury, whether it's the fact that it's just not working for you. Mike Williams is a guy who has fallen to wide receiver 31. P.S. I'm not sure when I do my final sweep of it, which I do this afternoon, whether that's going to be low enough. It's just every week at this point. You know, we saw the three straight weeks of five targets, two catches. Now we got, I think, six targets. And again, Pat, we talked about it that he was close. They targeted him a couple times on those slants in the end zone. So he could have caught the touchdown. But at some point, production matters. And again, Williams is just not getting it done. And Justin Herbert, by the way, like we haven't talked about this very much. Justin Herbert is basically the Tyler Lockett of quarterbacks at this point, where he either explodes or he does absolutely nothing. And there are a lot of these games right now where he is struggling. Keenan Allen is the guy in the passing game, and you have Austin Eckler. Williams is kind of the guy out. So again, wide receiver 31 for me. By the time I am done today fully revising my rankings, he might be more like 33 or 34. So I'm just off him.
Mike Williams and Josh Allen for A.J. Brown and Russell Wilson.
Definitely, I will take the A.J. Brown and Russell Wilson side with like no hesitation, like smash the accept button on that one. There you go, Rye.
I appreciate that, Pat. Who is your biggest riser and biggest faller at fantasy's deepest position?
Well, as much as I admire Dan, I have to mimic him and go with an Alabama rookie receiver as the biggest riser. So it's Devonta Smith. And, you know, just 2 weeks ago, he was coming off a one catch, 15-yard game against the Lions and had one touchdown to that point. Since then, nine catches, 182 yards, three touchdowns. But like it's kind of been there for him all year. Like he and Hurts just weren't clicking. He's 19th in air yards per game, I believe, one spot behind Justin Jefferson. So like Smith has been involved. He's the best receiver in this offense by a mile over, you know, Rager and Quez Watkins. And it seems like he and Hurts are kind of getting on the same page finally. And like you just see, I mean, the Twitter route breakdowns you see of Devonta Smith just clowning guys with some of his moves. I mean, it's just so fun to see. Like this guy is going to be a, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two for many, many years. I think he's going to have a nice finish this year.
So I'm going to pit your one of your biggest followers against your biggest riser, Devonta Smith or Damian Harris. Who would you rather have on the trade?
Devonta Smith.
And who's your biggest follower at receiver?
It's Cortland Sutton. It's kind of remarkable that he was looking like such an alpha when Jerry Jeudy was hurt. And right now, I think Sutton is still sitting at like sixth in air yards per game. Sixth. And his last three games, nine targets, five catches, 78 yards. Those three games coinciding with the return of Jerry Jeudy. And we know what kind of quarterback Teddy Bridgewater is. He would rather take the short completion than go hunting for the deep ball, the big play downfield. Maybe the Sutton-Jeudy combo can work if they can get Aaron Rodgers in town for 2022, but it's not working with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. So unfortunately, I mean, Sutton investors who were so thrilled with what they had just, you know, a month or two ago are just dismayed by what has become of their guy.
Sutton obviously was matched up with Darius Slay, one of the best lockdown corners in football in this past week. But as you mentioned, sort of been struggling the last couple of weeks as well. Would you trade Sutton for Antonio Brown?
Oh, yeah, I'd want Brown. I'd take the injury risk there, no question.
How about Sutton and A.J. Dillon for Amari Cooper?
Ooh, no, I'm keeping... I just want the Dillon end of that. So, I'm keeping Sutton in that case.
That's fair. Just two mailbag questions here today. We'll keep them quick. The first one I will give to Dan, since Pat has already talked a lot about A.J. Dillon. Who is a running back that's an equivalent worth of value to A.J. Dillon at this very moment? That comes from @SkiMaskChris.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because there are so many questions with Dillon, given the fact that the Packers have a bye coming up in week 13. So this could be 2 weeks worth of value. What is that worth to you at the moment? I have A.J. Dillon right now 15th in my rest of season rankings. That's like right where Leonard Fournette is. So that's sort of the spot where I feel like that's pretty equivalent value. Fournette is great. But Dillon should be dominant when over the next 2 weeks, realistically, when he's going to start. And he'll probably be sort of a borderline flex play going forward after that. So that's basically the equivalent value for me.
Pat, this one to you. @InfamousDC asks, coming off of IR, which running back has a brighter future for the remainder of the fantasy season, Miles Sanders or Chris Carson? Obviously, we've talked a lot about Miles Sanders, but I feel like it's been weeks since we've even mentioned Chris Carson's name on this show. So I wanted to get this question in.
Yeah, neck injuries are so tricky. I mean, it's hard to peg that, but I would take the leap of faith, I think, with Carson just because there's a less ambiguous situation for him. He's going to walk right in as the guy. I don't think he's going to share work with Collins. I think it's going to be a clear 1-2 situation there. Whereas I don't know what to expect with Miles Sanders' return. I mean, as I mentioned before, like he is a guy who seriously vexes me as far as what's going to happen with him over the next 6 weeks. So I would take Carson.
Guys, it's time for everybody's actual favorite part of the show, I assume. I know it at least is for Dan. It's my pop culture question. Today, I'm going to keep it really, really simple, as I promised Dan. We've talked a lot on past shows about some of our favorite sitcoms. So today, I'm just asking, what is your favorite non-sitcom television show of all time? Could be a drama, an action-heavy show, law or medical procedural, whatever it is. I just want to hear your favorite. I'll start with myself today to give you a second to think about it. My favorite show of all time in any genre is Game of Thrones. And yes, before the questions start coming in, I too was highly disappointed in season 8. I will never, ever forgive them for failing to land that plane. But the first 6 seasons were so truly awe-inspiring that I wouldn't be doing myself justice to pick any other show over it. So, Pat, I'll move to you. Give me your favorite non-sitcom of all time.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is on the short list for sure. I mean, I've got a Game of Thrones character as my Twitter avatar, for God's sakes. But it's Mad Men. You know, the character development and the stories and the twists they were able to throw into that show over its run was just incredible. And I mean, like, from the minute I watched the first episode of that, like, my wife just kind of saying, hey, you should watch this. And I was just so hooked right off the bat with that first episode. And, you know, I think I, during the early days of COVID, I rewatched the whole thing. There was some channel on DirecTV where they were showing an episode a day, and I faithfully recorded that and rewatched the whole thing again. So just an amazing show.
Nice. Dan?
I will say that I have a lot of favorite dramas, especially. I love The Wire, of course, one of my favorites. I love The West Wing, of course. But the greatest show to have ever been on television, in my humble opinion, is Breaking Bad. And I realize that that is probably a chalk play. But what I would say is this. I obviously watched the entire season. Recently, probably about a year ago, when I needed an excuse to force myself to run on the treadmill a little more, I said, you know what, maybe I'll just rewatch it. Maybe I'll rewatch it from start to finish. And I have never seen a show that continued to ascend into its eventual completely stick of the landing in the finale, in my opinion, of that show. And my mother is a huge TV fan, and that's a big part of our family. It was my father as well. And after every time I watched an episode, I basically would just text her and be like, I don't understand how it continues to get better every single time. And that was upon my second watching. So to me, really, I love Mad Men. I love Game of Thrones and a couple others. But Breaking Bad, to me, is the greatest television show that has ever been on.
Yeah, it might be the only show I can think of that truly did, like, every season was better than the last.
I
don't think it ever took a dip, which is pretty rare. And as you said, one of the rare shows that is this huge built-up hyped drama that actually does stick the landing, which is pretty fun. You said it was kind of like a chalk pick. I think all three of ours kind of were. I think if you were making, like, a March Madness-style bracket of every TV show, 3 of the 4 one seeds could very easily be Game of Thrones, Mad Men, and Breaking Bad. So obviously some iconic shows there. Thank you guys both for sharing that. And thank you as always for another fantastic episode today. Hopefully everybody listening is able to come away just a little bit better prepared for the playoff stretch run in their leagues. Please everybody remember all the awesome opportunities we mentioned today, including Prediction Strike with the promo code PROS and Pristine Auction with the promo code Fantasy Pros. Most of all, thank you the fans for listening. For Dan and Pat, I'm Ryan Wormley. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network.
Available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.